This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the August 11th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm joined here in studio with Mr. Eric Wing. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Mike.
Thank you. Pete Fornatel is taking the day off. It's a dark day for Saratoga. It's a dark day for Pete. He'll be back on Friday.
It's a dark day for the podcast.
It is a dark day for
Peter
the podcast.
Peter Thomas Fornatel.
Well, you know, he had a lot going on. And
we'll try to brighten it up, though. You know,
so we gave him a pass. We got enough to talk about between the two of us.
Is that like passing a race?
Yeah, I think so.
That's something I seldom do, like, unfortunately.
Well, we had a lot of good races over the weekend, and I know in addition to being on the podcast with us on Friday, you were also on DRF Live on Saturday with Dan Illman going over a lot of these races that we're talking about here. So I know at least with the Saratoga ones, you're going to probably have a lot to talk about, and I know you gave out a few winner. Well, you get at least Cavorting as a winner on the podcast on Friday, but you also gave out, was it Tutti Paese who ran quite well?
Tutti Paese and Liam's Map, who
That's
both,
true.
I suppose, could have won. Certainly Liam's Map could have won.
Absolutely.
Tutti Paese, you know, on the pan shot, I thought, oh, gosh, he was grossly fouled, and on the head-on, I thought it wasn't quite as blatant. And I'm not sure that she was going to beat Recepta, but she did run very well and was clearly at second best at the very least.
Yes, well, we'll get back to that one. Let's start with the Whitney. I think the Whitney is
not a bad race.
Certainly the main event over the weekend. And as many people thought, including our own Matt Bernier, and I would be inclined to agree, at least from the East Coast contingent, very much a preview of who we're likely to see in the Breeders' Cup Classic, at least those that continue to go on and run well. We had a couple after the race that ended up being retired in Moreno and Normandy Invasion. But all of the ones that ran well and all the ones that even had excuses, I think, will go on. And I think a large portion of that field we could see at Keeneland in October.
Yes, another one that could be doubtful to be seen at Keeneland in October is Noble Bird,
sure.
Who they're going to go over with the proverbial fine-tooth comb,
right,
to see if there was anything amiss. He checked out of things very quickly.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, when there's a pace duel, when there's a pace duel, the fact that one horse drops out of it early doesn't mean, oh, he was awful. Right. When you get cooked in a pace duel, you're likely to give up the ghost at any point.
Sure.
You know,
take Mr. Jordan and the Haskell.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. And I guess he came back fine.
He came back
from that
fine.
So it doesn't mean, oh, the horse is hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Some horses just chuck it when,
sure.
And it doesn't mean if they were to run the exact same race with the exact same fractions again that Noble Bird would be the first to surrender. It just wasn't his day for whatever reason. But I hope he's okay.
So.
He ran great in the Ali Sheba and again in the Stephen Foster. He would be a nice horse to have around later in the year, and I hope that's the case.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on from the ones that didn't run well to the ones that did. Honor Code gets up late to beat a tiring Liam's Map, who I think, all things considered, setting a ridiculous pace, held on really well and may have actually run the best race.
Oh, I think so. I think if you look at energy expended and, you know, energy distribution, I'm getting into all sorts of multisyllabic phrases that I don't really know the
energy
meaning of.
Energy is you know, that's,
oh, by the
that's
way,
a three-syllable word for you.
Can I make the point, by the way? Energy, the term energy level, that's the new high cruising speed.
Oh,
it's, it's the term of the, you know, well, we'll check the energy level coming out of the race before we decide where we're going to run next. Energy level is, if you want to sound smart in front of your friends, use
energy
the term
level.
Energy level.
Mm, okay, good to know. Well, hopefully everyone came out of the race with a high energy level. Liam's Map, I mean, 22-3, 46 flat, 109-3, opened up at the top of the stretch, looked like he was gone, got a little weary late, and was caught in the last jump by Honor Code, who obviously ran a huge race. Pace set up or not, he certainly proved that he fits two turns. He certainly proved that he is a legitimate player on the scene and probably one at least of the older horses that's likely to be favored in the Breeders' Cup Classic, assuming we also see American Pharoah there. He ran huge. They both came back Liam's Map and Honor Code. The number came back 113 buyer for each of the two of them. But like I said, I think Liam's Map may have run the best race. He was setting those ridiculous fractions, setting it up for Honor Code to rally late. Tonalist rallied late. Wicked Strong, who finished fourth, was relatively up on the pace. VE Day rallied. Everybody that was up early, they were well back or late.
Yeah, Tonalist ran a very good race,
he did.
By the way.
His,
he did. I'm sure Christophe Clement would have liked to have won or finished second, but there was nothing about his race, I thought, that
not at all
would be cause for any consternation or depression.
And like I said on the podcast, I could argue he is one that's better with more distance. 9 furlongs, maybe even a touch short for him.
And conversely, I think you have to, along with any bouquets and accolades you throw Liam's Map's way, it is worth pointing out this race was at 1 1/8 miles. If they reran the race 5-10 times with different pace scenarios, yes, Liam's Map probably would beat Honor Code based on what we saw Saturday in a number of those races, reruns. However, in a Breeders' Cup Classic scenario or potentially even in a Jockey Club Gold Cup scenario, the race will be at 1 1/4 miles, mm-hmm. which even with a slower pace, it's a different ball game.
Yeah, true.
And so, you know, with Liam's Map, I think you certainly would like to see him try 1 1/4 miles at some point with a more temperate pace. However, that doesn't mean that if he gets at more temperate pace going 1 1/4 miles, Honor Code won't run him down again, because that 1 1/4 miles figures to, based on what we saw Saturday, suit Honor Code same as it might suit Tonalist.
It's a fair point. The flip side to that is this was the first time Liam's Map had gone this far.
Mm-hmm.
And potentially, if assuming he trains well and moves forward off of this,
has a good energy level.
I don't see from running style, especially if he's, you know, Moreno was pressing the pace and possibly pressing him to go faster than he wanted to. Noble Bird, like you said, was up there pressing the pace as well. Without some of those forcing him to go faster, he could set down more reasonable fractions early, have a little bit more left in reserve. I mean, we'll see. I guess we'll find out. Probably Jockey Club Gold Cup next is what they're thinking.
For Liam's Map. There's talk he could come back in the Woodward, depending on his energy level coming out of the race. But
it's a drinking game if you're playing at home.
The other thing too is, in fairness to Honor Code, it was never never clear cut or that two turns was an issue for him.
Right.
A lot of that was, I think,
I
twofold. It was a function of two things. A, that funky Ali Sheba when he just didn't have his mind on running. I don't think that was a function of two turns necessarily.
No.
But the other thing too that made me wonder a little bit more is his one turn races, the Gulfstream Park Handicap and the Met Mile, were so good.
Yeah.
At some point you have to say, well, jeez, that's what he's really cut out to do.
Right.
He may just be cut out to do either one as long as he, you know, gets a somewhat honest pace in front of him.
Well, and that's a good point, a somewhat honest pace. He's one that I always like to go against at a short price because he needs help. You know, he needs things to go a certain way. And look, he fit, you know, if you bet him, you got $9.50 for your $2 win wager. He ran a huge race. I don't want to take anything away from him because he can step forward off of this and he could be a huge player. But I just hate these, or I should say, I tend to try to beat these big closers that need others to lay down fractions for them to rally into. I mean, there are certain horses that have proven they can make their own trips and they can come from off the pace despite the early fractions. Zenyatta is one that certainly comes to mind. But, you know, especially with what we saw in the Ali Sheba, especially with this horse who seems to be potentially a little bit of a head case, I don't know if I can completely trust him if he's going to be one of the favorites next out, either in the Woodward or Jockey Club Gold Cup or further down the road.
True, though, you can say that about not just, you know, Honor Code or put Zenyatta aside, but you could say that about 60 to 70% of all graded stakes grass horses. You know, they need the setup in front of them. They need the trip. They need the pace. I mean, so many of them come from behinders, and Honor Code is just a dirt horse that fits that bill.
Yeah.
The thing is, when you're running for seven figures, like they were in the Whitney, that tends to really kind of jack up the jockey, so to speak. And you know, they get excited. Mm-hmm. You know, a seven figure purse, and they're on that far turn and ready to push the button maybe a little earlier. Or say, I'm getting the lead going into the first turn, like Liam's Map was eager to do. Not just, you know, having the money on the line maybe plays into Honor Code's favor, because the other jockeys are wanting to be more aggressive with the big money down.
No, it's a good point, and it'll be interesting to see how everybody comes out of the race. I do, like you said, I hope Nobleberg comes out fine. He's a really good horse. He's an improving horse. I think this is one, if you can give him a pass because he was a little bit cooked by that pace, there's no reason why you wouldn't think that he wouldn't bounce back in his next start.
And by the way, Honor Code, Shug says one more race before the Breeders' Cup. Not sure whether he wants it to be the Jockey Club Gold Cup or the one-turn Grade 2 Kelso. Heading into it, thinks that, you know, maybe the one-turn will have him a little sharper for a potential run in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Liam's Map, it's less clear-cut than that. Could come back in the Woodward.
Right.
Could come back in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. I think the Kelso is possibly a candidate for him as well.
So here's the question. You're Todd Pletcher. You're, I guess, Teresa Viola Racing Stables, who's the owner of Liam's Map. Where do you target come Breeders' Cup? Do you have a classic horse, or is this a Breeders' Cup dirt mile horse?
Right this second, gun to my head, Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile,
okay.
Unless, and maybe that's a reason to go in a race like the Woodward or the Jockey mm-hmm. Club Gold Cup.
Yeah, do you test the waters
yes.
to see? Okay.
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Use that prep to test the waters. Nothing wrong with being
right.
in a turnback scenario
right.
if you think a mile and a quarter is just a little bit too far for him. He did nothing wrong.
No.
He, you know, in terms of...
he's never really run a bad race.
Sure, he got a high Moss Pace figure for that. For that
I did not
Whitney.
Check the Moss Pace, yes, I would agree.
You offer that Whitney, you'd like to give him a chance at a gigantic purse like the Breeders' Cup Classic if you think he can handle it, and maybe the next race will help you decide whether he can handle it rather than just turning him back already to the Kelso.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. I would actually. It sounds like you're thinking Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. I would kind of flip that and think, okay, we've got a classic horse until he proves otherwise. And if so, in, say, the Jockey Club Gold Cup or the Woodward, well, then we can use the fallback as the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. And that's an absolutely fine fallback.
And I think that thought is given credence by the fact that, you know, Pletcher had a number of theoretical candidates he could have run in the Whitney, and he redirected all of them except Liam's Map.
Right.
You know,
yes.
Protonico, Coach Inge
yes.
is going to go. Now, they were saying Pacific Classic. Now it's looking like the Woodward might be more likely.
Yep.
Race Day
right.
is going to run in the forego. He's
right.
going to really turn back to 7 furlongs, but he won the Oaklawn Handicap. So I'm guessing that Liam's Map, among the older horses and older males in Todd's stable, is sort of the apple of his eye, and I don't think Saturday's race would diminish his status within the barn whatsoever.
I would agree, and we'll actually use that as a leaping off point to not a race on Saturday, but a race on Sunday at Saratoga that featured another Todd horse who I think last year you might have thought of as the apple of his eye in terms of the older males in his barn. And that's Palace Malice, who ran fourth in the Alidar as the favorite. Came back buyer figure wise, I think a 90 or 91, which is in line with his return races since he got the issue and was sent to the sidelines. The winner in that race was Bay of Plenty, who opened up a big lead and held on late. What do you do with a horse like Palace Malice, who seems to have maybe lost a step in now his third race off of this layoff? According to Pletcher, I think they're still possibly looking at the Woodward. What do you think about that?
I'd have a lot of trouble if I owned the horse running him in the Woodward off of that race in the Alidar. And, you know, far be it from me to tell the connections like Todd Pletcher and Dogwood Stable how to campaign their horse. But I would, if it were me, I would look for a less ambitious spot next time.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, heck, less ambitious spot than the Woodward. I mean, the Alidar isn't that ambitious
right.
a spot
right.
in and of itself.
Exactly.
I'm not sure I would. I mean, the question becomes, you know, you want him in a race where he can be competitive and have a strong chance to win. And Pletcher will, you know, oversee his training on a daily basis. And he knows way more about the horse's fitness level than you, I, or any of our listeners put together. But I found it hard to take much, take anything good out of that race.
No.
I just wasn't impressed.
No, I know.
He made that move on the turn. He made a little bit of a brush around the turn, but he was sort of almost, I think, grinding to kind of do that, and then he was just empty in the stretch.
Well, and he was never, certainly never a factor on the win end. I mean, I think Bay of Plenty essentially ran him off their feet, got a little weary late, didn't change leads, but it didn't matter because he'd opened up such a clear lead. And he got a 102 buyer for that, which I got to figure they're going to be pleased with. That's Godolphin and Kieran, right? And I don't know where they're thinking next for him. Certainly two turns seems to be better than the one turn.
I think he's another Woodward/Kelso.
Makes sense. Makes sense. I would
either or both.
If I had to say, I would try him in the two-turn Woodward. But yeah, he's another interesting one.
The issue there with the Woodward is if Bay of Plenty runs and Liam's Map is also running, it may be a scenario where they don't really, neither one, Pletcher nor McLaughlin, is eager to run if the other's in the race. Because they're only going to compromise each other's chances.
Sure, sure. But you had mentioned that Coach Inge, who's another Todd Pletcher, is now seeming to be more pointed toward the Woodward, which would make me think, especially since Todd made sure they didn't meet up here in the Whitney, that maybe Liam's Map is going to look elsewhere, like the Jockey Club Gold Cup, perhaps.
Agreed.
So,
agreed.
There, that's my Monday morning quarterbacking. We'll see how accurate...
On Tuesday.
How accurate I am about that assessment. But you're right. I mean, with Palace Malice, they got to be going back. I mean, maybe they're saying publicly, you know, this is what we wanted out of him. You know, he moves forward, another two-turn race. We've got more bottom. You know, if he comes out and has good energy level, why not keep going towards the Woodward? But privately, and if I was involved, I would be feeling like, boy, this is not the same horse we saw last year or the year prior. I just wonder if his best days are behind him. He also didn't show that prominent early speed that we've seen from him in the past. And even though he maybe kind of ranged up and rallied, and, you know, it was more of a grinding effort that was never threatening. And, you know, if he was anything close to the horse that we've seen in the past, I would expect him to be the one running late, not his stablemate, Mylute, who certainly you also have to wonder, why is, if Todd thinks that Palace Malice is legitimate, why is he running another one in this spot?
I mean, he probably wasn't sure. And I think the decision facing the Palace Malice camp is whether the horse stays in training.
Right. Yeah. Well, they're still talking the Woodward for him. So if they pull him out of training, you know, that'll be a big 180. But we'll see. It's interesting. I hope he finds his form again. He's a nice horse. He's a good one. I think no matter what happens, as a son of Curlin, he'll be interesting as a stallion. And I guess we'll find out sooner or later. So back to Saturday, We had four other stakes races at Saratoga, two other graded stakes races. Four of the public handicapper races were at Saratoga. We covered the Whitney already. We had the test, seven furlongs for three-year-old fillies. It was won by Cavorting. She rallied late to overtake Bar of Gold and pull away. She earned a 93 buyer. You tipped her on the podcast. Great job.
Oh, thanks. You know, not exactly rocket science. She was the 3-1 morning line favorite. You know, I just, that 93 is down 7 points from the 100 buyer she got in the Jersey Girl. Sure. She didn't break real sharply, but I thought she broke fine and kind of, she looked menacing throughout the race. And then a very nice ride to get to swing out. Save ground, some ground early, and then swing out to get the pace or to get the opening, the running room coming down the stretch. So good job by Arad Ortiz Jr. Much the best in that race. I mean, she ran one of these races. She ran 1:22.4, and sometimes, you know, with a I didn't break down the times, but when I analyze these races in my own head. And I see went down 7 buyer points. What's up with that? Mm-hmm. And then if the time had come back like 1:23 and change, 1:24, something slow. But when they run 1:22 and change, like just in general, I'm not saying in this case necessarily, but in general, I ask the question, like how fast was she supposed to run? Well, she was supposed to run 1:21.2, 1:20. You know, 1:22 flat, I guess.
What would she have needed to get to that 100 buyers?
1:22 flat would have given her a 1:03. So, you know, I thought it was fine, especially she looked good doing it. And we know she's got the capability to run 100. Now, she's only going to run one more time. She's pointing to the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. And there are a couple of options for her next, her one and only race prior to the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. Those being the Gallant Bloom.
Okay.
The Gallant Bloom at Belmont against Older. The Charlestown Oaks for three-year-old fillies, which is a two-turn race, but at 7 furlongs, it's a rich race. And or possibly they threw out the possibility of the Cotillion on September 19th at Parks. So, but it seems like, and the Cotillion is a ton of money.
Right.
But it looks like they're thinking, for the most part, one turn with her, at least long term.
And makes, then makes
no,
sense,
no, yeah. I jokingly threw out, just because I think it's a real cool thing when a filly wins both the test and the Alabama, but that. I threw that possibility out on DRF Live just because she came from behind, but I was, didn't even believe it while I was saying it, and that doesn't seem to be on the on the short list of McLaughlin next spots.
No, no, and you know, she's a good one. She on the podcast, I said if she runs her race, they could all be running for second. She clearly ran her race. She's just one that has run a few clunkers, and she was, you know, I'm not sure what kind of filly we're going to see every time she runs. It's nice to see her put together two good efforts in a row. One of your angles that you've mentioned a number of times is you like a horse that regresses in terms of buyer figure standpoint off of a win.
Yeah, as long as you win.
Right.
The
right.
regression doesn't matter.
The regression doesn't matter, and that the next out, they'll likely jump back up to that previous buyer figure. It's a good angle. It's one for you guys to write down and think about next time you're handicapping races. I thought Bar of Gold ran a fantastic race. At the top of the stretch, she looked like she might have been long gone. Cavorting just came and inhaled her late. But boy, she's certainly a good one. She had a whole lot of trouble in the Acorn. In fact, she might have, in a race loaded with bad trips and trouble, she might have been the one that took the brunt of it. She's certainly a really good filly, and I wonder what they do with her. They might stretch her. I could see them stretching her back out to two turns again.
Cotillion, potentially. Yeah, she ran great. She had reportedly been working well. Irish Jasper took all kinds of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, she broke slowly, and I'm sure they didn't want her 10th early.
Well, she got, essentially, Cavorting got the trip in the run that you would hope Irish Jasper would get. Irish Jasper was just a little later, and by the time she put her run together, there were a few other tiring horses she had to go through. She ran an okay fourth. She certainly never threatened on the win end. You know, and it just comes right down to she just wasn't quite as good. It was a little bit of a class test for her, and she proved maybe she's not quite as good as Cavorting, but she's certainly a nice late-running sprinter.
And Angela Renee, not to criticize downwind, but that 9-2 price on her had me a little confused. She just hadn't run fast enough to win. Oh, and we should mention Take Charge Brandy. Interesting prep for the Alabama. Gun to the lead in the test and then drop back to last. But
well, you know, look, sure, her best angle or her best race is on the front end. I had my concerns about going this short. She's best when she's able to use her speed and conserve it and dole it out in, you know, bits and pieces, like she was able to do quite well in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies.
When you picked her.
When I picked her. I loved her at 61-1. I didn't like her at 8-1 in this spot in the cut back off of the long layoff. But assuming she comes out with a good energy level, comes out okay.
Very nice.
I don't see any reason why she couldn't move forward off of this race, especially getting back to two turns, being by Giant's Causeway out of a dam that's half to Take Charge, Will Take Charge and Take Charge Indy. That's a pedigree and a style that says, I want more ground than a one-turn sprint. I don't know if the Alabama is too quick. You know, I mean, if it's the next out that she's going to really show her best, or if she needs one or two more races of bottom underneath her. But, you know, I wouldn't pull the plug on her yet.
I don't disagree with anything you just said, Mike. I think it makes good sense. And I would consider you to have somewhat special insight on Take Charge Brandy, kinship to
just
some
from
degree.
From afar, yeah. Sure.
But let me ask you this rhetorical question. If you own Take Charge Brandy, and you had in the back of your mind, you know, I might like to run her in the Alabama this year if all goes well, how could this race in the test have gone any worse? I mean, well, like, at least if she got left and then, oh, she rushed off, that's why, you know, but she in terms of a prep for a longer race, to me, this is about as bad as it could get.
Sure. Yeah, oh, if my long-term goal with her were the Alabama.
I mean, maybe they were trying to win the test with her. I don't know, but
I don't know. I mean, from what I've seen in all of her races, she's one that wants the lead. She's one that's really, she has rated once in the Delta Jackpot. She sat off a horse that was just faster from her out of the gate, which is fine. But it wasn't like, let's take her back to third or fourth and change her style. She's going to go. She's got one gear.
Yep.
It's go, and it's keep that speed at a high cruising.
High cruising speed. Now I'm going back to couple
last,
years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Keep that high cruising speed and carry it across a route of ground. So yeah, you're thinking in this race, and I don't know. I'm not sure what D'Wayne said about it either prior or after, but I don't know if they're thinking she really wants a 7-furlong race first off of a long layoff after a bit of an injury. I think they're figuring, we're going to give her a race. We're going to let her run well. We'd like to at least hit the board. They got to be a little disappointed about finishing last here. And maybe if the goal was the Alabama, you rethink it and you find another route. But I think the longer goal is still probably the Breeders' Cup. And with this being, you know, with D'Wayne, boy, there could be 3 or 4 races before we see her in the Breeders' Cup. With this being the first off of the bench, and the fact that she showed speed like she's done in the past and was up there for a little while, I wouldn't be too concerned.
who was the second place? Who got DQ'd out of the, I'm drawing a blank, out of the coaching club American Oaks?
I'm a chatterbox.
Thank you. I'm a chatterbox. I'm thinking like Larry Jones and Tom Proctor, include Betty, and maybe even Pletcher with Curalina. I'm thinking the three of them go partners on their own private van, chauffeur-driven van that they're going to send to the Lucas barn to make sure that Take Charge Brandy gets to the Alabama on time, doesn't miss the race. I think they would. None of those three would mind seeing her in the Alabama.
Help set up the,
yeah, it's
the
like,
race for their
it's home. Like a pitcher that you can't wait to hit against. You send a limousine to the hotel to make sure he gets to the park on time.
Right, right. No, it's a fair point. You know, certainly in the Alabama, off of this effort, you'd have to question whether she's ready to go that far, that fast, or that quickly, I should say. But yeah, so that's it. Anything else before we move on from the test and tackle the other races?
No. I thought Recepta ran well in the De La Rose. Mm-hmm. Nice to see Jimmy Toner. She's always had a touch of quality to
she
her.
Has, yeah.
Even with it would have been better for my wallet had Tutti Paese won that race, but I think the result, you know, was what it should have been. And then, you know, in the Weah, which was graded for the first time this year, Grade Three, mm-hmm. Goldie Espone, again, like she had in her previous race, just benefits from a clear lead and a slow pace, mm-hmm. and. Hard to draw too many conclusions out of that race,
no,
I'm afraid, except that, you know, the horse with the class edge, Danza Cavallo, you know, there were a couple of horses this weekend. I'm going to make, this is a podcast, we can be loose, right? I'm going to make a couple of comments.
Yes, please do.
There are a lot of people, not just on Twitter, but in the course of conversation that love to, you know, get on jockeys for bad
absolutely.
Rides and so forth.
Yeah,
and sometimes it's deserved, you know, either ignoring a blatant track bias or something that we as handicappers you might feel is obvious that,
yes.
But, you know, there was...
Most of the time, though, it tends to, I see it as a reaction, often an overreaction, but yes, please go.
But Irad Ortiz got some heat on social media for his ride on Danza Cavallo. The horse was fighting him all the way, and if you didn't think that was true, go back and watch Danza Cavallo's previous race in the Gamely when she was also rank.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't get on jockeys
right.
for sins that are those of the horse rather than the jockey. And
absolutely.
There was another one yesterday
absolutely.
In the fourth or fifth race. It was Cornelio Velasquez riding on the five horse in a two-turn grass race when he got nailed at the wire by the Chad Brown 5-1. Mm-hmm. And the horse had his head cocked, mm-hmm. was looking in the infield.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cornelio was having all kinds of trouble riding him, but people were on Cornelio because he
right.
looked, admittedly, he looked funny going around the track. He
right.
was,
right.
the horse was just, was crazed.
Right.
It was the George Weaver horse that... Mm-hmm.
Late Night Mark.
Thank you.
Is the name of the
thank
one.
You. It's, you know, at least criticize the jockeys when it's their fault, not
sure.
when it's they're riding
sure.
some sort of, you know, equine head case.
Right, absolutely. And if you ever want to see an example of a horse being rank, you know, sometimes people see that. You see that in the running lines or somebody talks about a horse being rank. And sometimes it's easy to spot, sometimes it's not. You want to see an extreme example... Watch the replay of the Weah. Danza Cavallo breaking from the 11 post on the outside as the 5-2 favorite was rank all the way essentially on the backside before tiring and finishing second to last. That is, it's nothing that the jockey can do. You know, I mean, they're fighting the horse the whole way, trying to get it to relax, and you know, sometimes he or she just doesn't want to. But you're right, Goldie Espone. Speed in the rail, the weight shift didn't matter. Ultimately, she just wired the field, looked best, ran off by three and a quarter. A good price if you liked her. You got 11.20 on your win wager.
Your horse didn't disgrace herself, evidently.
Evidently, yeah. You know, I mean, that was my concern with her. I certainly didn't bet her. I've loved her in other races. The distance was a question. She'd never gone 12 furlongs before. She ran quite well.
34-1.
34-1.
And she closed into a slow pace.
She closed into a slow pace. She was only really what, two necks away from finishing second. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a good one. She's the thing I love about her is she seems like a little bit of a head case, and often sometimes she broke her maiden on the lead. She's had other races where she sit 27-2 in the first quarter. She just seems all over the map. You don't know what you're going to get, but always going to get a good price on a horse who seemingly has a lot of talent. You know, so what can you say? Back to the De La Rose for a second. Recepta won. As you said, she won easily, 2.25 lengths. She paid $8.30 if you liked her. I was surprised how much she got bet. She was the clear second choice behind Daring Kathy, who I think neither of us trusted as a short-priced favorite, and ended up finishing ninth. Two things. One, the horse I was on and loved on the podcast, Miss Frost. The race worked out the way I thought it would, kind of. She broke like Goldie Esponi. She had the speed. She had the rail. She broke well. She got the lead. She had a clear lead. But whereas Goldie Esponi, certainly granted she was going an extra half mile further, she was able to lay down 25, 50 and 3, 116 and 2. Miss Frost was doing 22 and 4, 46 and 2, 110 and 3. That's a lot harder to carry a field wire to wire. I'm not going to blame Irod on that ride either necessarily, because sometimes the horse is just too keen. You've got a speed horse, they want to go, they go. It just didn't work out there. Recepta ran a huge race. Your horse, Tutti Paese, ran second. I'm going to ask you a question. We haven't talked about this. I actually brought it up to Matt Bernier, who loved Recepta and mentioned he bet her in a contest, I think. Do you think Recepta is disqualified if Little Bit Sassy gets up and nails her for place at the wire? Because they looked at, you mentioned you thought perhaps there was a foul, but Recepta was clearly the best. Tutti Paese was not going to get the win. But if the incident that they still looked at, if it had cost her a placing, Tutti Paese finishes under the line third by a neck or a head or a nose, do you think they make a change?
That's a great question. It changes the equation, obviously, Mike, because that, you know, did it cost the horse a placing question seems to be the litmus test,
right,
on a number of these.
Magnolite.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's like that's exact same scenario.
In some case, it seems to be the only criterion
for making such a call.
I'm going to say no. And that's from having watched the head on and what looked egregious on the pan shot. I thought John Velasquez came in a little.
Yeah.
I don't think Tutti Paese ever had her path completely taken away. I think she might have gotten intimidated, or perhaps mm-hmm. the rider got intimidated, or perhaps Recepta was, you know, Tutti Paese wasn't going to catch Recepta, and Junior Alvarado accentuated the shift in, shall
right.
we say,
right.
from John Velasquez. So I'm going to say no to that question, but it's a fair question. And it all comes down to the fact of whether you thought Tutti Paese was fouled. And I'm saying that regardless of where she finished vis-a-vis a Little Bit Sassy, I'm not sure she was fouled. And believe me, I'd love to shake my finger and say she was unjustly deprived of the win slot because I picked her. But, you know, I thought it was less than met the eye once you watched the head-on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I have a definitive answer one way or another, but I do say it's a lot easier to make it a no-call when she runs second.
That is true, I agree.
And I think the stewards were probably, you know, when they're reviewing the head-on, trying to make the decisions, it was a pretty easy call to leave it as stands. Had Little Bit Sassy gotten up for second, I don't know. I think based on what I've seen this meet, it's maybe 50-50, and I wouldn't have been surprised if they took her down. So anyway, all right. Well, that covers the Saturday racing, at least at Saratoga. We had a few other races around the country, particularly at Del Mar. There was the John C. Mabee on Saturday. It was a blanket finish. Electrum was the winner. She got a 92 buyer. Oh, I didn't mention, Recepta got a 92 buyer in winning the De La Rose. Goldie Espone, 93 in the Weah. At least on the buyer figure, those are not the kinds of figures that would make the top of the division, the hard not to likes.
Oh, of course not.
Quake in their boots. No. I didn't see anything, at least on the turf.
No, and I, you know, with the possible exception of an unranked Danza Cavallo, I'm not sure that any of the horses in those two races had legitimate designs on the top of the division.
Right, absolutely. I'm with you there. Electrum, 92 buyer, blanket finish, four horses across the track. That's another one, you know. I mean, it's a fine race, and you know, great if you better, but I don't know if you want any of those moving forward, at least in the, you know, older filly and mare turf route division. The interesting one for me over the weekend was one of the horses that I've loved for a while, was my Derby horse for a while, Prospect Park, made his debut on the turf. It's a little bit of a head scratcher for me, just because he's been such a good dirt horse and presumably could be one that makes a bit of a splash even in the, you know, something like the Travers or the, you know, the Penn Derby or, you know, wherever American Pharoah doesn't go next. I could see a horse like Prospect Park, especially with Dortmund, has only worked once or twice since the Preakness. You know, some of the others almost kind of up for grabs. Why couldn't a horse like Prospect Park make some noise on the dirt? Instead, they run him on the turf. He wins the La Jolla easily. He gets a 99 buyer. They're thinking the Del Mar Derby next for him, which is also on the turf.
Grade one.
I know long term, and we talked about it a little on the podcast. I don't know if you were here for the discussion. You've got a good router. You've got a good horse in North America. You stand to make a lot more money running them on the dirt, presuming that they can take to both surfaces, than you do running them on the turf. Well, is that a concern? Do you think that there's something else there? I mean, you got to wonder.
In Prospect Park's case?
Yeah, or in general.
Well, I mean, in general, you could say anything you want, but in Prospect Park's case, I think my guess is Clifford Size had at least been toying with turf all along for whatever reason, either how the horse had trained or what his pedigree is or his foot, that I think perhaps they suspected that the horse really liked grass based on training and whatnot, and the La Jolla was going to be the real test to see what the next move might be. And based on his La Jolla, there's nothing wrong with the $400,000 and the grade one status of the Del Mar Derby. So I think that decision got made for him in a jiffy rather than, and everything, yes, there's money to be made on the dirt. On the other side of the coin, everything's a function of who you have to run against. And now, you know, like Bolo's out of that division now, right, out west. And, you know, maybe a Todd Pletcher or a Graham Motion will, they may ship somebody out in the Del Mar Derby, but you would think that race will come up softer than pretty much any grade one or grade two, three-year-old stake still to be run east of the Mississippi at a Saratoga or a Parks right, in the next couple of months.
Right. Well, I'm also thinking not just the purses, but you've got Prospect Park, who's a tappet. He is out of a graded stakes winning mare. He's a half to a graded stakes winning mare. He's out of a graded stakes winning mare and who's a half to another one. The pedigree is there. And certainly, you know, showing that he can run on dirt, showing that he can run on turf, you know, the win in the La Jolla proves that. I would be thinking, if I owned him, I would be thinking longer term. You know, where am I going to get my most value as a son of a tappet? You know, is it the Breeders' Cup, either the Dirt Mile or even the Classic, if you want to shoot big, and there's no reason to think he couldn't run next year as a four-year-old? Or is it the Del Mar Derby,
Wait a minute. Now, he's training
the favorite for the Del Mar Derby, and you're criticizing his.
Yeah, I am. I am, because in the La Jolla, who did you beat? He beat Ohm, who is going to be, if anything, not, he's a nice horse, don't get me wrong, but if he's remembered for anything, he's likely to be remembered as the answer to a trivia question, right? Who is the only horse that has beaten American Pharoah to this point?
You know,
it's not...
My grandfather told me something one day.
Yeah, what was that?
He said, grandson...
He called you grandson? He didn't even call you by your first name?
Eric, keep yourself in the best possible company and your horses in the worst possible company.
Evidently, he didn't work for Gennady Dorochenko.
No. Or, but no, I mean, I don't. There's no. What's to say he can't run in and possibly win the Del Mar Derby and then run in a race that you would approve of in his next start?
Well, yeah, no, it's true. And the nice thing is you've got options here now. Obviously, you know. It opens the door for a lot more possibilities when you've got a horse that's proven that they like dirt and turf. Part of why I do this is more, and not necessarily a second guess or question, because they know, you know, they're around the horse. They know much more than I do. I'm sitting 3,000 miles away, and I'm just some idiot that looks at races on the screen. But, you know, I wonder. It's nice. It's a nice position to be in, and it's nice to have a few options, and we'll see where he goes from there, because he's one I've always liked and have followed for a while.
Clifford, stick to your guns. You're doing a great job. Wish you the best in the Del Mar Derby.
Right.
Keep it going.
That's right. All right. Well, that pretty much covers it. There's a couple other races. We'll you know, I think we've blabbered on enough for one day. Anything you want to cover
no,
before
No, just,
we go?
You know, there's a bunch of more two-year-old races coming up.
That's
and
true.
Nyquist won the Best Pal
he
on
did.
Saturday. The Sorrento is tomorrow. Baffert's got a quick one in there, and John Sadler has a nice filly. So that race, you know, a rare Wednesday graded stake for two-year-olds, that's well worth watching. And then, of course, some more, I believe the Adirondack is this Saturday at Saratoga. So kind of the second wave of two-year-olds who might be players down the line
right.
in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and Juvenile Filly. And of course, we saw a very nice filly unveiled in Constellation by the Steve Asmussen barn.
Mm-hmm.
She just ran away and hit. I think she only got a 73 buyer, but she looked impressive doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, speaking of running away and hiding, Young Brian debuted
on
Saturday at Del Mar. Ran away and hid after breaking kind of slowly from the rail. Couldn't have looked better, couldn't have looked more professional. Was bet like a good thing, too. The buyer came back in 86, which is not the best we've seen for a two-year-old this year, but certainly quite high. I think they got to be thinking big things for him.
The other thing, too, Mike, to me, an 86 achieved at 6.5 furlongs or,
right.
you know,
six
at,
fur-
at a,
yeah,
six
right.
fur- that's better than, like, some of these 5-furlong
right.
Final time figures, regardless of figure maker,
right.
a lot less reliable and steady, I think, than to me, there's a world of difference between a 5 or 5.5 furlong buyer fig versus a 6 furlong. And
right.
it's not through any fault of the figure makers,
right.
there's just more extrapolation that has to be done the shorter the race.
Well, and I'm with you. I mean, I look at the buyers, but I'm not beholden to the buyers. For me, it's more important to see how they did it, you know, and you couldn't have asked a horse to look more impressive than the way Young Brian looked on Saturday. So he's an interesting one to look forward to going forward. I would imagine they got to be thinking of graded stakes for him next out. Because, yeah, he looks like a good one. All right. Well, that's it. Thank you, Eric.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
A
I
pleasure.
Enjoyed it.
It's always a pleasure to have you.
Likewise.
You're welcome anytime. We missed Pete. Pete, we'll see you on Friday. We'll talk to you sooner. We have a webinar. Pete and I are doing a webinar on Thursday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. We're going to be diving into trainer patterns and trainer filters through Formulator. Sign up if you haven't. I'll tweet out the link to do so. It should be a fun one. Get some good sets. If you have anything, throw them my way, and we'll we'll serve them up on the webinar on Thursday.
Very good. Will do.
All right. Thanks, everyone.